This is All Things Considered on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Peter Biello. If you grew up in the 1970s or 1980s, this sound may be familiar to you. You remember that, don't you? That's Simon, the electronic memory game that gives you increasingly difficult patterns of sounds and colors to remember and repeat. Some of the credit for inventing it goes to late Manchester resident Ralph Bayer. Bayer was part of a team that developed the first home video game in the late 1960s. Now, the National Museum of American History in Washington, D.C., has included Bayer's Manchester workshop as part of its innovation wing. Here with more details on Bayer and this new exhibit is David Brooks. He's a columnist for the Nashua Telegraph and writer at graniteGeek.org. Welcome, David.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pretty big honor to have your workshop reproduced in a Smithsonian museum, but Bayer did much more than just help invent Simon.
He did, and he had a lot of honors. He received the National Medal of Technology from President George W. Bush. He was in the National Inventors Hall of Fame, and he's really well-known, almost revered amongst part of the online gaming community. And specifically because when he was an engineer at Sanders Associates, which is now BAE Systems here in Nashua, part of his work, what he did kind of on the side, was he led a team, he and a couple of other engineers, and they developed, as you say, the first home video game, which was eventually sold as Magnavox Odyssey. And it was Pong. It was a version of Pong that you could play on your TV set and then a couple other things. So obviously these are old-time TV sets, the cathode ray tubes, which is a stream of electrons that's fired at the back of the screen you're looking at and causes a glow when it hits, and the stream of electrons is moved around by magnetic fields, and that's how you make a TV picture. And really the big insight that Bayer and his team had was that they can make electronics which would allow people watching the TV set to move that stream of electrons around as well. And they realized they developed a game, the Pong game, and some other games, a shooting game with a gun and all sorts of things that you could do on your TV set. And really it's recognized as the first home video game.
You interviewed Bayer a few times. What was he like?
He was a character. He was a great guy. But I didn't meet him until he was already in his 70s. But he was still inventing furiously, inventing right up to the very end. When I talked to the folks at the National Museum of American History, they came and they talked to him about taking his workshop, and his concern was then he wouldn't have anywhere to work. And so he built another workshop up in his bedroom, even as he was getting quite sick. He never really stopped. When I worked on him, he was working on an electronic bicycle noisemaker, so you could ride your bicycle around and make it sound like a Harley Davidson and things like that. His personal story, which is part of the reason that, frankly, the museum was interested in him, is that his family, they were Jewish living in Germany, who fled the Nazis, the rise of the Nazis in the 30s. So he arrived in the U.S. as a young boy, obviously became an American citizen and lived here all his life. So he was it was a good part of the story. And he was a television technician before he became an engineer and ended up at Sanders Associates, which is why he thought about working with televisions. He had a kind of a different viewpoint of them than many of the electronic guys he was working around.
So what will the exhibit at the museum consist of?
They specifically came and took his workshop. He lived in a small, not small, but modest home in North Manchester. Nothing grandiose by any means. And it was in a long basement, you know, with wood paneled walls. And frankly, you walk in and it remind you of, if you're my age, remind you of the houses you grew up in from the 60s. And well, one end of it, he had a workshop. And what he'd actually done is he'd put a fake brick exterior wall with a window in it and a mailbox and a door. So when you entered his workshop, it was like you were entering a whole different building, a little house. It was sort of a joke he had. And they came and they took the whole workshop, the desk and the books and, you know, the oscilloscope and the soldering iron and all the stuff that any electrical engineer or any inventor would recognize, books galore and manuals and old magazines and his jacket. They even took the mailbox and the flower box outside the window with fake flowers in it, and they took that too. And they've set it all up, recreated it inside a big glass case there at the museum. It's on the first floor of their new wing, which, as you said, is about innovation. And the whole idea was this is a place where innovation occurred. And many inventors have similar spaces. Whatever it is, they have somewhere where they can go and tinker and make mistakes and burn their fingers and figure things out. And this was his.
And is the idea that the museum is kind of pushing that innovation can sort of happen anywhere, depending on whether or not you have the will to invent something.
Yeah, exactly. It can even happen in a place with, you know, plastic flowers outside a fake wall. It's just a story. It's very, very American story, particularly because obviously he's, as I said, he's somebody who chose to be an American who came here and decided to stay and did really interesting different things, partly through force of personality and through hard work and through brains and through experimentation.
David, thank you very much.
You bet.
That's David Brooks, a columnist at the Nashua Telegraph and a geek among geeks at graniteGeek.org.